This podcast is brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Hi, this is Peter Couples, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
Australian lead singer of a blue-eyed soul group formed in 1975, the only Australian band to be signed to Motown Records in the USA. My podcast guest is Peter Couples. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Gavin. How are you, mate?
Fantastic. All the better for having you on the podcast.
Yes, I've been looking forward to doing this. Great.
Now, I know about Peter Couples, the lead singer of Stylus, and what a band that was. We'll get to that very shortly. But I want to know about Peter Couples, the early years. You know, where were you born?
I was born down in Gippsland, actually in Yarram Hospital, but we lived in Woodside, which is just off the 90 Mile Beach, about 5K off the beach.
Very nice. Nice spot to be born.
Oh, yeah. No, it was fantastic. You know, as kids, we'd ride our bike down to the beach. There's also McLaughlin's Inlet down there, so there's a big inlet, lots of good fishing and swimming and all that sort of stuff. So it was, I loved growing up in the bush. My father was a trapper, but also music because I had music. My grandfather played violin. My grandmother played piano. Uncle Gordy played accordion and Dad played mandolin. So they used to have a family band.
That's a bit of a strange mix, though. My dad, the trapper, what did he trap?
Rabbits.
Oh, he's a rabbit trapper.
Yeah, he was a rabbit trapper.
Was there bounties on rabbits back then? Were they a plague?
Yeah, no, you could sell the skins and you could sell the rabbits themselves. So he would do that. He was kind of like a shearer in season, but in the off season, he would go trapping. But it was a great life, you know. I mean, we lived on bloody rabbits and kangaroo and birds, ducks and all that sort of stuff. Whatever you could get your hands on in those days. But it was a good life. We probably looked to have a meagre existence, but we thought we had the world, which was great.
Mate, there was still a big meal on the table every night time, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And my mother did the best braised rabbit going around.
Mate, now tell me about the parents. Were they self-taught with music?
Yeah, they were all self-taught. My mother inherited my grandmother's piano. My grandmother died the year I was born, so Mum inherited the piano and sort of taught herself to play. And it was good fun in those days because my father was also the local SP boogie, so he wore many hats around town.
Your dad was pretty cool. I like him.
He was, though, as a party man, and everybody liked him. But so he'd be down the pub on a Saturday, you know, taking bets and doing whatever. And then Saturday night, 6 o'clock closing, they'd get some long necks and they'd come back to our place. We had the music, we had the parties, and they'd party till the wee hours. And it was good because the other parents would bring their kids as well, so us kids would go out and play in the bush at night. It was fabulous.
So siblings, brothers, sisters?
Yeah, Dad had 3 kids. Mum had 2, and they got together and had another 4. And I was the youngest.
A blended family with lots of kids. It doesn't get better than that.
No, it's a strange bunch, but we all got on pretty well. The older ones of Dad's kids, of course, had left the nest before I was born. In fact, I've got a nephew that's a couple of months older than me and a niece who's a year younger. So, yeah, we get on great. I always got on fantastic with my 4 brothers that I grew up with. My brother Terry played music, and I joined his band when I was 12 years old.
Were you singing or playing something?
Yeah, I was singing, and I spent the first year at secondary school, the holidays, I worked all through the holidays in the shearing sheds to earn enough money to buy my first guitar, which was a Kenora. And I had enough money left over to buy an album, so I bought the band album with Up on Cripple Creek on it.
That's a good album.
That's a ripping album. Yeah, absolutely love it. And that was the start of it.
Well, you had good musical taste right from the get-go.
Yeah, well, Terry used to buy records, and he was really into the singer-songwriters. He loved Dylan, he loved Paul Simon, he loved James Taylor, and a slight hint of sort of country music. We ended up having a band at one stage called Wheatfield, where we used to play a lot of band, nitty-gritty dirt band, Poco, all that sort of stuff. We absolutely loved that sort of country rock music.
Now, tell me about school and the good days. Did you enjoy school, or you just couldn't wait to get home and get into the band?
Primary school was okay, but when I got to secondary, the headmaster was it took an instant dislike to me because my father had a run-in with him the year before over my brother. You know, first day of assembly, he just comes up and pokes me in the chest and goes, "You're a Couples, I'm going to keep my eye on you." That's kind of like set me off. And then he just used to, and my father died a few months after I'd started school that year. And then he just started beating the crap out of me. There was three other kids that didn't have fathers, and he just didn't pick on them because there's no one to retaliate. He used to hit with a fist. He hit so hard he actually cracked my friend's jaw.
Really?
It was like, you know, I failed that first year.
Did he get reported? You know, did he?
No.
Not
in those days, no.
No one had a prayer meeting with him up the side of a building somewhere.
No, they didn't. They should have.
I hope the karma bus got him.
Yeah, well, he's gone. He's gone to God now, so.
No, he hasn't gone to God. He's gone a little further down the elevator, mate. He's gone down to the basement.
He's a cellar dweller.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I left school as soon as I could and just pursued music. That's all I wanted. I actually started a painting apprenticeship when I first left and did a couple of years of that. But then I got drafted by Footscray for football. So, at the age of 17, I moved to Melbourne and I spent a season playing, training with the Dogs. And Terry and I, the band that we had, was called the Academy, and the original drummer from Stylus, Peter Lee, because we went to school together and we've went through all the bands up until Stylus, and another fella by the name of Stan Williams. We performed at the country final at Festival Hall. First original song that I'd ever written, I wrote it with Terry, called The Drought. We performed that. We didn't win, but we did get some interest from a couple of agents. So, and we told them that we were moving down. So the very first job that we did in Melbourne was actually at the George Hotel. It was an underbelly hangout back in those days. There was a crook called Jack Twist.
Good name.
Yeah, when Jack wasn't hibernating on Snake Island, he'd hang out at the George. And, of course, if Jack requested a song, you better know it. And I'd always tell him, you go, can you do this? And I'd go, oh, Terry, I'll do it for you. Because Terry had a photographic memory and knew every damn song.
Oh, thank God for Terry.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. He saved my ass.
How did Peter Couples, Ashley Henderson, Ronnie Pears, Peter Lee and Peter Roberts come together?
Well, Peter Lee and myself joined up with a guy called Ian Mason.
Oh, I love Ian. He did all the 3XY jingles.
Yes, yeah. And Ian had Ronnie in his band and Ian Thompson from Adelaide was playing bass. And anyway, we joined and Ian wanted to have this band called Mason's Cure and try his luck at releasing a couple of singles. Yeah, Ian left. He realised he was going to make a lot more money out of doing the jingle scene than touring his pants off around the country. So Sam McNally came in and we just started playing my material. And
you became Stylus.
Yes, we became Stylus.
How did you get the name?
I can't remember, to be honest.
It's the best name for a group, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. And that's why I wrote the song Getting in the Groove. That's what a stylist does.
Well, you had two big songs in 75, of course, World of Make Believe and Summer Breeze. Anyone that could take on a Seals and Croft number and make it your own, that's pretty special. But tell me about World of Make Believe, which is my all-time favourite stylist song.
Yeah, that was one of the ones, when I first wrote that, I thought, oh, gee, I reckon this might be a bit of a hit. You know, I felt really confident about it. You know, it was just that nice sing-along, catchy. It was, just a nice little love song, I suppose, in many respects. And it did it. It's probably eclipsed our version of Summer Breeze as far as chart position, which was great. But, it kind of set us up, I think, then, because we had those two quite different sorts of songs, but it was still that kind of stylus sound.
And it's still rewarding you today in all your solo shows. People demand to hear those two songs.
Yeah, I don't do Summer Breeze much anymore in my solo gigs, but yeah, no, I do Make Believe because it's one that I wrote for a start. So yeah, it's probably my most successful. So
Tobin Brothers believe every life is unique. Every funeral should be too. Visit turbanbrothers.com.au.
Hi, this is Peter Couples, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
I said in the opening to this podcast that you were signed by Motown Records in the USA. Now, Blue-Eyed Soul, did they know that you were all white?
Yeah, it was interesting how that came about because we'd just acquired the management of the Wheatley brothers, Glenn and Paul, when they were together. And Glenn was heading off to Meedam in France, that kind of music conference type thing where record companies and publishers and managers all meet there and do deals for different territories and stuff like that. publishing deals and record deals and whatever deals. And Glenn couldn't afford to actually have a stall at the industry thing. But he what he did was he stayed in the hotel where all the major players were, and he would just accost them in the foyer. So anyway, he got talking to Barney Ailes. And Barney had been with Berry Gordy since the beginning, but Barney was actually a white guy, and he played him, Stylus. And he goes, "Oh, this is incredible." He goes, "Oh my God, we got this new label called the Prodigal Label," and he said, "This will be perfect for it." He said, "We'll put a mask on the front so people won't know what colour they are."
Oh, that's good.
We ended up with that, Zorro mask on the front of the cover, but it wasn't a great marriage because there was a lot of people in Motown that didn't want to have a white act, let alone one from Australia. They thought it should be predominantly what was set up for black artists, which we understood, but Barney was pretty enthusiastic, and that was good. But then I think Barney ended up getting poached by Elton John when he set up Rocket Records, and he went to work for Elton. Basically, when he left, the enthusiasm for the Stylus project left as well. So, but we did get to release two albums internationally with Motown, so it was a great honour, really. I mean, all my favourite acts were on Motown, and it was, to think that, you achieved something that nobody else has achieved. It was, it was quite an honour.
And remarkable as well. And congratulations. Now, Stylus, of course, went on and made five albums, a live album, 10 singles. You supported George Benson, The Average White Band, Ike and Tina Turner. And you're well-respected by your peers and a high-class act. I mean, you couldn't get any better than that.
Yeah, it was great. It really was. And like even today, people, musicians and that, come up and go, "Well, what a band, how incredible that was, for that time." And it was, and those tours were fantastic, particularly the Benson tour, because we got to do the whole tour with George. We ended up in Adelaide and then went back to the hotel, and they made a private room for us with a piano in there, and we were able to sit around and sing together and play. And he had two keyboard players, and we had Sam, who's also incredibly good. And we just played songs and sang songs. It was a fantastic experience. Something that's sort of rare to have that kind of interaction with a touring artist. It was really great.
Now, you appeared on Countdown, well documented on YouTube, Fear of Thunder, the Peter Couples Band.
Yes. What a band that was. My God, with David Hirschfelder and
Virgil Donati, one of the greatest drummers in the world now.
Yes, Robbie Littlelump was on bass, and Ross Ingles was on guitar. Roscoe was just an absolute ripping player. And there's that live concert we did for Rock Arena. That's on YouTube as well. And even listening to that today, it sounds pretty incredible how those guys were playing. It was just amazing. I had to pinch myself when I go out on stage. It was incredible.
Now, speaking of a powerhouse, John English, who we love and adore and miss terribly, you and John got a kinship, a mateship together, and you did shows, and they were terrific. Tell me about the time with John English and all the shows you did.
Yeah, look, it was absolutely fabulous. And we were celebrating 20 years of doing the Uncork show. How it came about was Simon Gallagher asked me to play Frederick in the Pirates of Penzance for the tour of New Zealand, because Simon didn't want to play. He just wanted to be the producer. So I thought, oh, this is a good experience for me. I'm started to write a musical. Give me a good look at how it all comes together and all that sort of stuff. And it was great. And John was fantastic. I'd already known John's Countdown days. And, we'd meet in the bowels of Channel 9 when he was doing All Together Now, and I'd be doing the midday show and stuff like that. Anyway, we both took our acoustic guitars with us, and we just decided on one of our nights off, which was only one, that we'd put on a show for the cast and crew. So we had a bit of a rehearsal, a bit of a bash, and then we did that for the cast and crew, and we absolutely loved it. We thought, wow, we've got to do more of this when we get back to Australia. So we did, and we got more serious about it, and we practiced harder, and it really grew. The show really grew. Every time we'd put it on stage, it'd be different. The banter between John and I would just go off in all sorts of different directions. He was such a generous performer to work with. It was all equal all the way along the board with John. And for me, he was the absolute superstar. I mean, everything that John did was incredible, whether it be, you know, movies, telly series, you know, rock and roll, theatre, straight theatre, musical theatre. He was amazing, John, and the loveliest, loveliest man.
I always remember the Foster Brothers, and he toured like you did for many, many years, but I still reckon Hollywood 7 is probably one of the greatest songs ever recorded in this country for John English.
Oh, yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. And, yeah, no, we did that every night. You know, it was just, and that's the way we sort of finished the show, and then we'd come back on and do a Beatles medley. But, yeah, I got to spend the last 2 weeks with him before he passed. We did some shows in Country Victoria in Melbourne, the Flying Saucer Club we did in Melbourne, and then we went to Adelaide for the Fringe Festival. And John had a fall for the first night, and I went to get him to, you know, in the morning to go and have coffee, and he goes, "Oh, Captain," he goes, "Oh, I had a bit of a fall. I think I've cracked a rib." So he, I said, "Go back to bed, mate, and just relax. I'll bring you a coffee." And then he was in a lot of pain that night when we picked him up to go to sound check, and we're pumping painkillers into him and all this sort of stuff. But as I've always stated, the loneliest job you could ever have is being John English's understudy, because you never get to go on stage. He would just, it didn't matter what, you know, how he was. I was absolute pro. So, yeah, to cut the story short, you know, he gets home and he goes and has x-ray, and he's got four broken ribs and a punctured lung. And he performed. That's the amazing thing with John. It was just incredible. Just incredible. Oh, my God.
And he died on the operating table.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah, yeah, it was incredibly sad. I actually had to get away. The phone started ringing and people wanted to interview me and stuff, and I think I did one interview, and then I said to Dee, "Come on, we're going camping." So we just packed the car and we went out of radio range. I just had to sort of process the whole thing.
Yeah, look, I fully understand that. And sorry to keep the sadness going for this moment, but about 27 years ago, that horrible event happened in Port Arthur, and you were at the Marilla Estate in Tasmania having a nice time the night before, and you could have been there on that day.
Yeah. I had a show to do at Marilla. My friend Tim was running Marilla at that stage, and during the day I met the winemaker, Jason Winter, and lovely, affable person, you know, big guy and really enthusiastic about wine, which I am, and we were getting on like a house on fire. And I did my little dinner show there that night, and then we sat around with Tim and Jason and sampled some of the wines after the gig. And he goes, "My father-in-law's coming into New Zealand in the morning, and we're going to Port Arthur for the day. Would you like to come?" And I said, "Oh, I've never been there." And Tim said, "Well, look, I've already made plans for us to go and have lunch up this restaurant up in the hills." And they were going to be leaving far too early for me anyway, so I declined the offer. And, of course, you know, Jason was shot and killed saving his family.
That's when the devil came.
The day the devil came, yep.
Now, you were so moved, you recorded Observations, your album, and on that album is your song The Day the Devil Came, which is haunting. And it just moves you so much.
I actually wrote that probably about a few months after the incident, probably maybe 3-4 months. And I never planned to release it. But when I did the Observations album, because I was kind of, a lot of the songs were about sort of current affairs, you know, what's going on in the world now with, you know, bullying, mental health and things like that, I thought, I think this song could sit, because it still goes on in America every week. I think this song could really fit. So I actually sent it a copy to Jason's wife, Jo, who I met when I was in New Zealand doing the Pirates. And we got together and we had lunch and talked and drank wines and stuff, which was lovely. And we'd always stayed in touch. So I sent her the song and I said, "I didn't want to release it without your approval." And Mitchell, of course, who was 15 months old and now lives to be a grown man with his own life and family, and thanks to his father's ultimate sacrifice, When she said that, you really honoured him, and plus honoured everyone else that were taken on that day.
And you did a beautiful thing too, because proceeds from that song go to help upkeep the Memorial Gardens, which is a lovely legacy for you.
Yeah, yes, that's right, yeah.
Now, let's get on to Hey Hey It's Saturday, when you and Tommy Emmanuel cut loose. That was fun.
That was fantastic. It was weird because Tommy couldn't get on by himself. And I said, this is silly, come on with me. So I said to Daryl, and Daryl and I had always been really good friends since doing Hey Hey back when it was a cartoon show in 1975. And I said to Daryl, look, you've got to get Tommy on. You know, you can come on with me. And I said, we'll play acoustic guitar and you can play congas.
There you go. That won him. That won him straight away.
So I think we ended up doing three performances, and then everybody realised what a freak he was. He just came on and played with the band after that.
And then soon after that, Tommy went to the world, and now look at him now, one of the top five guitarists in the world, just like Virgil Donati is one of the top five drummers in the world. You've had the best in your bands.
Yeah, I have. And you know what? I was in America about 5 years ago, and Tommy invited me to be a guest on two of his shows.
Fantastic.
And it was great, and he gave me such a beautiful introduction to, and it went down really, really well. I absolutely loved it. But I'd never been to a concert where before the end of the show, I reckon during the concert, he would have probably had five standing ovations just with the stuff that he does. They can't help but just get out of their seat. It was spine tingling. It was just brilliant to watch. And he's such a gorgeous guy, Tommy. He's played on my albums. I've done some things for him. And, just awesome.
Any song can be played at a funeral. What would you like? Visit TobinBrothers.com.au.
Hi, this is Peter Couples, and you're listening to Gavin Wood's podcast.
Now, you've now gone into this genre. I mean, your Stevie Wonder shows. Was that Inner Visions or Songs in the Key of Life? You're singing the whole album as a show?
No. I just called the show Songs in the Key of Life. That we do. We go right back, you know, to like, you know, I Was Made to Love Her and, you know, Machete and More and all those early hits for the 60s. I actually put together a medley of all the 60s hits because it's just, it's too many songs and too little time. So, we did put together the Stevie Show, you know, have horn players and stuff, and it's an absolutely cracking band. And it's been very successful and, you know, getting lots of sellouts, which is great. And then when COVID hit, I decided to do a Bacharach show. So I spent 2 years just doing my own arrangements and recording Bacharach songs.
That's your future. I've seen it. I couldn't go there. I was so upset I couldn't get to Empire Studios.
Yeah.
But you singing This Guy's in Love with You, the Herb Albert song. You put a swing version into it.
Yeah.
And it's a great version. But all those songs of Bacharach, you could tour that. You're like the Rod Stewart in the American Songbook. You know, it's but you can do that, Peter. Mm-hmm. I reckon that's your superannuation, my friend.
Yes, it's good. I'm actually trying to get it into the cruise liners, but I'm not having much luck at the moment. But what I am doing later in the year, and I've already booked one venue, and I'm just about to book another, and is I'm putting the two shows together. So I'm going to do the first half Bacharach and the second half Stevie Wonder.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's good.
With a 9-piece band.
Oh, man. You could tour that around the country for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And get standing ovations every night, because at Empire Studios, when you did that show, standing O. I mean, that's pretty cool. And there would have been a lot of hard-nosed musical people in that audience that night.
Yes. Yeah, there was. Yeah. No, it was great. Look, it is. Oh, the thing with Bacharach, and I guess with Stevie too, that you just know all the songs. I mean, he had something like 32 number ones, and I mean, you know, the hardest part is what songs do you leave out?
But it's your interpretation. It's your phrasing. It's your voice. It's just beautiful, and it contemporizes those songs that were written back in the 60s. You know, you've put a new contemporary twist on it, and they sound really fine. I love them.
Yeah, no, I love doing the show. It's just an absolute joy to do, to play that music. It's so well crafted. I mean, you're talking of Bacharach and Stevie Wonder. Well, they're arguably two of the greatest composers that we've of our lifetime. Just incredible.
Good on you. Excellent. Now, tell me about Dee and the family. How are they going? Tell me all about it.
Yes, mate. I'm very, very, very lucky man. I have a magnificent wife. I have five kids, three girls and two boys, and then I've got five grandchildren as well. Who are just absolutely delightful, and they're growing up now too. My eldest granddaughter's 23, so who knows? I could be a great grandfather before too long.
Mate, you need to keep working.
Yeah, I know I do.
Now, just to finish this podcast, I'm going to ask you 10 questions.
Yep.
And without notice, so I hope you don't mind.
Yep.
All right. First question: who inspired you to make music?
My family.
Second question. What have you learnt over your musical journey?
I've learnt a lot about life, and I've learnt a lot about psychology, and I've learnt a lot about myself.
What was the effect of Countdown to your career?
It was magnificent. It just made everybody's career. I mean, prior to Countdown, there was no real avenue to get to the country, out into the country and around the country, and that just changed the whole face of our industry. It was incredible.
Now, you've opened up shows for George Benson, Average White Band, Ike and Tina Turner. If you could open up a show for any artist, who would it be?
Good question. Oh, golly, I'd be so damn nervous. I'd have to say Stevie, but I'd be too nervous to sing. I have met him, actually. But
yeah. How did that go?
It was great. I was producing a band in Melbourne called Jabalani, and when Stevie came out, Jabalani got in touch with Stevie, and we had a sort of a meet and a greet at San Francisco's nightclub. Yeah, it was great. It was really good sitting around a table singing. It was a bit of fun.
Yeah, he's quite an amazing man.
Yeah.
Name three dinner guests, dead or alive, you and three other people.
Or maybe Spike Milligan.
Oh, funny man.
Robin Williams.
Oh, you just want to have a laugh.
I do, yeah, and I do like a laugh. And the chairman of the board, Frank.
Oh, yeah. What about Sinatra? How cool was he?
Yeah, well, I got to open for him at Sanctuary Cove, which was just absolutely enormous.
Oh, you just dropped that one in now. how cool... Tell me about that, because I'm a big Frank fan.
Yeah, it was absolutely awesome. Well, I was up there for a week because it was an 80-piece orchestra, and I had to sing the final Countdown. It's, you know that song? It's the final Countdown. Yeah, that one. And I did that in Touch of Paradise.
Oh, beautiful.
And it was just absolutely awesome. I mean, I think there was something like 50,000 people on the ninth fairway of Sanctuary Cove.
That was that Mike Gore. Mike Gore was the guy that organised it all. I remember it well. And Frank flew in the helicopter and picked up, sang a few songs, picked up a million and flew off.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Clive James compared because they were making a special out of it for the BBC.
Yeah, yeah.
And, that was a great time, really great time. And the night before was Whitney Houston.
Oh, well, that's a pretty good double. Did you get to meet the chairman?
No, couldn't get near him.
He didn't say, get out of my way, kid.
Oh, that's what I tell people.
What's Peter Couple's favourite song to perform?
At the moment, it's The Look of Love. I just absolutely adore playing that song.
Yeah, you can get into it, can't you?
Yeah.
What's the most trouble you've ever gotten into, young man?
Most trouble? I suppose it would have been at school. I kept getting beaten up all the time.
Nothing in your formative years?
I was just always into music, and Stylus was as tame as. We were all bloody vegetarians and health fanatics. We did not.
I know. You came up to Channel 9 and you were drinking jasmine tea.
Yes. Yeah, so we're a really bloody boring bunch, but, and then you get married and you have kids, and that becomes your life then, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you could change anything about the music industry, what would you do?
I was a voice for this for a while, but just to get the Australian quota increased on radio and not have it buried from midnight to dawn.
Yeah.
It's I wrote letters to Farb back in the day, and then you just, anyway, that's my bugbear was, yeah.
It becomes too political, doesn't it, really, at the end of the day?
Yeah, well, I mean, you see, look at the countries like Ireland and Canada who have great local content, and that way, that, you know, and it helps to helps bands then become international. You know, they you know, there's so many great acts that have come out of Canada and Ireland, and we don't have that support. We just don't have that support.
We had it back in the 80s, but then since then it's just all dropped off, and Taylor Swift came in, and it's goodbye to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, and it's a whole new way of doing things now, you know. I mean, people don't have CD players anymore, so when you release a CD, you're just basically doing it for yourself and for a few loyal fans.
What's the best show that you've ever done?
I really loved doing opening for the Doobie Brothers with the Peter Couples Band. Really loved that show. That was fantastic. The band was great. Michael McDonald was just awesome. He was actually keen on producing an album for me at one stage.
Final question, Peter Couples. What have you learnt, and what would you pass on to a young, hopeful musician?
Just stay true to yourself. I think, you know, you can try and change to please other people, but at the end of the day, you really need to, you know, to be honest and authentic to yourself. And that way you will draw people to you, I think, is probably the best thing, and just stay the course.
Well, you're one of the great singer, songwriter, performers in this country, Peter Couples. We all love you. Everybody in the business loves you and what you've done. And we're all happy about you going out with Stevie and Bert, because I reckon that's going to be the big show for Peter Couples. Mm. Keep working on it.
Thanks, Gavin. Much appreciate your time, mate.
Okay,
thanks,
buddy.
Mate. See you, buddy.
All the best. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Mate. Bye. This podcast brought to you thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives every day.